Gospel reductionism replaces the Bible as the source and norm of theology with the gospel. What would a gospel reductionist edition of Luther's Small Catechism look like? Find out in the latest issues, etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Russell Dawn details his journey from Anglicanism to Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org. We have witnessed some very public persons who have been driven for various reasons to the point of despair, even to the point of taking their own life in the Christian community. Of late here in the United States, it puzzles some, obviously. It breaks the hearts of many. How is it that Christians, even Christians, can commit suicide? And what does the church do not only after, but especially before, when the signs are there, when there are things leading up to this, that the church might be able to mitigate in the life of this Christian who is in such deep depression and despair? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about depression, suicide, and the church, Pastor Scott Stiegemeyer. He's assistant professor of theology and bioethics at Concordia University, Irvine, California, author of a recent column titled Depression, Suicide, and the Church. Scott, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. It's great to be on.
You have a story of your own to tell about this. It involves your brother back in 1992. Tell us that story, if you would.
Yeah, so my brother was 12 years older than I, and in 1992, he took his own life. He had many issues with substance abuse and failed relationships and couldn't keep a job. He had many issues in his life, and I think that he was struggling with untreated or at least undertreated depression. And he was self-medicating with alcohol and other things. And so he ended up at a point where he had been in and out of jail. I mean, there'd just been so many things that seemed to be going wrong for him objectively. And he took the ultimate act and took his own life.
Now, the materialist's answer to the question of why someone would take their own life, if you would play that out for us, this notion that we're just atoms, we're just a random collection of matter and energy.
Yeah, so, I mean, as I think through this, there's two ways to look at the world, right? I mean, there's at least two ways, and one is the materialist view, which just sees the human person as nothing more than atoms and energy, like you said, just material. And that person doesn't see that they are a creature of God. They don't see that they have an eternal destiny. And so very often, people that operate with a materialist worldview, they come to a point where they feel like they have no answer and they may take their lives. And they everything for them, their consciousness, their mind, their memories, their emotions and will is all just in the brain. And what I was trying to do in my article a little bit is talk about how the Christian view of what makes you, you, is something more. That, yes, we are made of the soil of the earth, but we're animated by the very breath of God in a way, too. And we are created in the image and likeness of God, and we're precious in His sight, redeemed by the Son of God on the cross. And that's a completely game-changing way to look at the human being. And so what I try to do with my article is explain that treating something like depression, because we are both matter and something more, spirit, that it can be treated with medication, but there also needs to be sort of a spiritual approach too.
Talk a little bit more about that Christian view of man. You say embodied souls, and both body and soul interrelate, yeah, and both of them matter.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think sometimes Christians are guilty of seeing themselves mostly as just, we tend towards just being super spiritual. And we think that if you're having mental problems, if you're having emotional problems, that it can be solved with just prayer and Bible reading and going to church. And those are obviously very important parts of the solution, and they're very important for anybody's well-being and health and life. But we are also physical creatures, and our brain is also a physical organ of our bodies, and it can go wrong in physical ways, chemical ways, or other physical, physiological ways. And so sometimes I think Christians don't want to talk about mental illness in the church, or they don't want to talk about depression openly and honestly because they want to just have a quick spiritual fix. And we are more complex than that. It certainly does involve a spiritual solution, which is the gospel. But there are other modalities, other treatments, other types of interventions that can really help folks as well. And just like if you had diabetes or cancer, you wouldn't simply try to treat it. Normally, Christians wouldn't just try to treat that with prayer and faith and going to church more.
Does knowing that, believing that as a Christian about ourselves and our bodies and our minds and spirits, even our brains, does that necessarily give us the answer, why do some people take their own lives?
Yeah, it's mysterious, right? I mean, the mind is still, even with centuries of wisdom and the best medical science, there's still a lot we don't understand about the way the brain works, even though we're learning a lot, especially with the new imaging technologies that exist, about the ways that the brain works and that brain states equate to mental states or moods or feelings. We're starting to understand that, but the materialists, again, just can't really, in my opinion, can't really come up with an answer as to how mere non-living matter or mere matter can have consciousness, have awareness. So I think that they miss out something, where the Christian might miss out on taking a medical approach, the materialist might miss out on understanding ourselves as spiritual beings as well.
You just mentioned this, but how can a better understanding of how our brains develop over the course of our lives help us better understand chronic depression?
So there's this concept called neuroplasticity, and what that means is that your brain is changeable. They used to think that the brain, once you emerged from infancy, that your brain was pretty much set. And what we've learned is that while changing the synapses and connections between the cells, the neurons in your brain, is more difficult as you get older, there are still new synapses, new connections made all the time. And so one thing we've learned is that the thoughts that you think affect the shape of your brain, the wiring of your brain, if you want to use that imagery. And so if a person continually thinks negative thoughts, if they are sort of stuck in a loop, you know, sort of like a tape that is just kind of going around and around, giving them negative, dark, and destructive thoughts, and really inaccurate thoughts about themselves and about the world, about their life, then that can actually change the structure of the brain, and then it becomes sort of a vicious cycle. The structure of the brain is more inclined towards that mode of thinking, and that mode of thinking makes the brain more inclined to do that. So it becomes sort of a very difficult thing to escape. And now there are some means, there are some ways that this can be treated, but we're still so much that has to be learned.
Pastor Scott Stiegemeyer is our guest. We're talking about depression, suicide, and the church on this Thursday, September the 19th. When we come back, what things have proven helpful in coping with chronic depression?
Invited to Oktoberfest featuring the Waterloo German Band Friday night, October 18th at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois. Oktoberfest features a traditional German buffet dinner, silent and oral auctions, and of course, beer. Tickets are $15. Attendance is limited to 200. Proceeds benefit St. Paul Lutheran School, the only classical Lutheran school in Greater St. Louis. Learn more and purchase tickets at school.stpaulhamel.org. Oktoberfest is sponsored in part by Seavers Equipment, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, Ernst Heating and Cooling, Lutheran Public Radio, St. Paul's Ladies' Aid, Chick-fil-A, and Baker Construction. Oktoberfest, Friday night, October 18th at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois. School.stpaulhamel.org.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor Scott Stiegemeyer is our guest. He's Assistant Professor of Theology and Bioethics at Concordia University, Irvine, California, author of a recent column titled Depression, Suicide, and the Church. Scott, what kind of things have proven helpful in coping with chronic depression? You have pointed out that there's so much about it we don't understand, that we don't deal with, but there are coping mechanisms, aren't there?
Yeah, there's a lot that can be done, actually. There's a lot of good news. There's reason to be optimistic and feel good about this because there's medication, antidepressant medications. There's a wide range of different medications that do provide people, a lot of people, a great deal of help. But in addition to that, very often people benefit from something called cognitive behavior therapy, CBT. And cognitive behavior therapy, simply put, says you know how your brain always has sort of a tape going, sort of an inner monologue where you're describing your world and you're evaluating yourself and grading the things that happen to you? Well, someone that struggles with chronic depression is always seeing the downside, is always seeing the negative, and everything looks bad, and people don't like you, or it's never going to get better, and it's always going to stay bad. And what cognitive behavior therapy does is it helps you train yourself so that you can identify when you're thinking that way and that you can intercept those thoughts and replace them with new and more accurate thinking. And it's not just about the power of positive thinking like Norman Vincent Peale or just saying your daily affirmations. It's legitimately retraining your brain so that you suddenly, instead of thinking, well, no one likes me, you begin to automatically think, well, maybe not everybody likes me, but I know that some people like me, I have friends, my mother loves me, Jesus loves me, it's not all bad. And, you know, that sounds very simple, but with a therapist, with someone who's trained in cognitive behavior therapy, they can really help a person change the way they think so that those automatic negative thoughts are replaced with automatic neutral thinking or more realistic thinking, accurate thinking about themselves and about the world. So those are a couple of things that science and medicine, there's medication, there's therapy, but being part of having good social connections, joining a congregation, getting proper exercise and eating properly, getting enough sunshine, you know, there's so many different things that affect our moods and can help someone who's struggling with chronic depression. But there are some folks who are treatment resistant and for whom a lot of these therapies may provide some benefit but don't seem to provide enough of a benefit. And those are the real hard cases.
Is suicide an unforgivable sin? Is it a point of no return past which there is no grace in Jesus Christ?
I sure don't think so, Todd. I think that a person that takes their own life usually or very often is in a lot of pain. And when you are in a lot of pain, you don't think clearly. You don't make good decisions. You do things you would not otherwise do. It's just like if you burn yourself or if you stub your toe or if you have physical pain, it may make you react in ways that are not positive or good or beneficial. In the same way, if you have a lot of psychological pain or emotional pain and it just doesn't go away and you can't find relief, I don't necessarily automatically think that people who take their own lives, who die by suicide, are renouncing God and are without faith or hope in Jesus. I think sometimes, very often, they're simply in unrelieved, unremitting pain that they at least feel that there is no way out for them, and so to find some relief, they act in desperation. So I don't think that it is necessarily unfaith or unbelief in it, just sort of renouncing God. I don't think suicide is necessarily an unforgivable sin.
The reformer Martin Luther used an analogy, and in many ways he was breaking with a long, long tradition in the Western Church of viewing suicide as an unforgivable sin. And the analogy he used, I'd like you to explain it a little bit to us, was of a man who is being chased in the woods by robbers, and eventually they catch him and they kill him. And he says that robber is the devil. How would you explain that?
Yeah, I think that analogy works. The analogy, as I understand it, is a man is overwhelmed. He's overtaken. I think it's Shakespeare that said that when troubles come, they come not single spies, but in battalions. And I think that's similar to what Luther is saying, is that sometimes a person can be overwhelmed, overcome with sorrows and mental pain, and that person is being attacked, is being assaulted. And so sometimes, you know, that person might be the one who ends up taking his own life as a way to try to find some out, some exit. And we need to have compassion for these individuals and for folks around us, because we don't always know what suffering people are experiencing. People that are depressed can often put on a very good display of being amiable and cheerful, and it's not always so.
You ask, which human creature other than our Lord can truly be said to be in his right mind? What do you mean by that question?
Yeah, it's my way of saying that we're fallen. All human beings, with the exception of Jesus, who is without sin, all human beings are corrupted and fallen. And in our brokenness, I think that affects our thinking. It's not just we get cancer or diabetes, but it also affects our mind and our soul and our spirit. And so our thinking is sometimes affected. I think everybody's thinking is affected by the fall. And that's what I mean, you know, that we're not fully sane. We're not fully there. And that's true of everybody. And so I was simply just trying to point out that everybody may experience this brokenness of their mind, for some folks, it is much more extreme.
Then talk about how faith can coexist even with the despair and the hopelessness, and often that is simply an emotion that is in the midst of chronic depression.
Yeah. Well, we are both sinners and saints. I think that faith can coexist with doubt. We somehow, if we haven't experienced this or we haven't thought a lot about this, we might just assume that someone who commits suicide is just rejecting life. And I don't think so. I think they want to live. They want to be happy. They want to be free of whatever it is that's of the depression or the mental illness or that which is oppressing them. And sometimes, just like the trapped animal might gnaw off his arm or his leg in order to get free from a trap. So I think because we're sinners and saints, I think our theology helps us with this, that because we believe that we are in this life sinful, we are sinners and saints by the grace of God at the same time. And so therefore it's possible for a person to be wrestling with despair, wrestling with hopelessness, while at the same time, in a different way, even though it seems to be a paradox, they do love Jesus. They do trust Jesus. They do have faith in Jesus. But that sinner-saint dichotomy really helps us out, I think.
How does the church make room for those who suffer from and struggle with chronic depression?
Well, that's a great question, and I think that's something we really need to work at. Because, as you mentioned in your lead-in, there have been a couple of cases where well-known pastors have recently taken their own lives. And this is very tragic and sad when anybody takes their life. And the church needs to talk about this. We need to be able to discuss this. I found in my parish ministry that if I would talk as the pastor, if I would talk about a tough issue or a difficult issue, not necessarily autobiographically, but if I would just raise a subject that is sensitive, it gave people more permission, it seems, to discuss it with their pastor, with me. And we in the church need to discuss mental health issues, and we need to work on eradicating the stigma and wrapping it up in shame as if that's it's a character flaw to be depressed or to have anxiety or to have OCD or something or schizophrenia. That it's not a character flaw, and it's not something that someone just by act of their will can overcome. I think the church needs to talk about it. People who are depressed feel isolated by their depression. And if church is a place where everybody's got their act together, if your church is a place where everybody's living the victorious Christian life and they're happy all the time, then you're going to feel even more isolated at church. So I'm not saying that we need to wallow in negative things, but we do need to be honest and talk about that Christians struggle and suffer as well.
Not every person who struggles with chronic depression has suicidal thoughts, but many, many do. What can the church do in particular to help those who are struggling with suicidal or self-destructive thoughts?
Yeah, you're right. I think that for one thing, we can start to do, as I was saying, is we can start to help make sure that folks don't feel isolated by having conversations in the church at various levels so that people know they can go to their pastor, that they know that they can go to their deaconess or a church worker or a fellow Christian, and that they can bear each other's burdens because mental illness is very isolating. It does tend to, and not just for the person who has the mental illness, but for their family too, the people that love them can often feel very separated. So we can do, I think we can make a lot of headway by bringing this into the light of day and talking about it compassionately and by being informed and by finding resources like the National Alliance for Mental Illness. There's a lot of resources and support out there if we can help people access that.
Pastor Scott Stiegemeyer is Assistant Professor of Theology and Bioethics at Concordia University, Irvine, California, author of a recent column titled Depression, Suicide, and the Church. You can read it under the Talk on Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Scott, thank you very much.
Well, it's a pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
We're going to be talking about a Washington Post story about meeting the religious needs of people with dementia. Dr. Tyler Arnold will be our guest on the other side of the break, Collegium Fellow for Doxology, the Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel.
Jesus tells in the parable of the sower how the seed of the word is assaulted by birds and weeds and sun.
Pastor Brian Wolfmiller, author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, A Martyr's Faith in a Faithless World.
This is the assault on our faith which the Lord wants to fight against and prevent. Some seed, that is, enduring faith, endures to the end, and the Lord teaches us how to have it in His Word.
Learn more about A Martyr's Faith in a Faithless World at issuesetc.org.
Old theology, new technology. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Register your high schooler today for Careers for Christ Weekend at Concordia University Chicago. From October 4th through 6th, spend the weekend with Lutheran youth, connect with CUC faculty, staff, and students, explore our Lutheran teacher education, DCE, deaconess, director of parish music, and pre-seminary programs. Sign up now at cuchicago.edu/c4c. That's cuchicago.edu/c4c.
Gospel reductionism replaces the Bible as the source and norm of theology with the gospel. What would a gospel reductionist edition of Luther's Small Catechism look like? Find out in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Russell Dawn details his journey from Anglicanism to Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.